Hi, thanks for tuning in. I'm Paul Zimmy Finn. This is The Generation Report. What difference does it make if history is inherently cyclical? Why does it matter? It makes a difference because if history is inherently cyclical, then it becomes possible to see the changes happening today in a much clearer context than if history were inherently not. And it matters because if the cyclical nature of history can be substantiated, not scientifically proven, a crucial difference, then it becomes possible to use that lens to expand general understanding enormously. From the beginning, this series has been an effort to explain, test, and refine a set of ideas developed by William Strauss and Neil Howe. As most listeners probably already know, Strauss and Howe were a tandem of demographers and historians who famously predicted that in the years around 2020, America would pass through a major national crisis. A crisis that would be reminiscent in its tensions and its essential stakes to what the country experienced during the years that spanned the Great Depression and World War II, the Civil War, and the American Revolution. Strauss and Howe famously called that impending crisis a fourth turning in a book by the same title, and the fourth turning has been widely acknowledged to be their signature work since its publishing in 1997. It goes without saying that this podcast never would have been based around the fourth turning's ideas and insights if I didn't believe in their essential merits. To quickly belabor what should be obvious, the evidence in favor of history being cyclical, and American history in particular being cyclical, is absolutely overwhelming. But in order for the events going on today to be appreciated for their potential implications and not just passively assigned a historical context based on an old theory, the conversation about the fourth turning and its ideas must evolve, and eventually leave behind what has become an old and very tired set of talking points. I first read The Fourth Turning in April 2014, 10 years ago. Over the years, I've listened to countless summaries given of the fourth turning's theory, as well as every single interview of Strauss and Howe I could find. All too often, these summary recitations and these interviews fall back on simple analogies with the past and descriptions of current events in purely analytical terms, thereby creating the impression that this current national crisis is in most meaningful respects like every previous one in American history. Adding to that sense is Neil Howe's recent book, The Fourth Turning Is Here, which goes to even greater lengths than the 1997 original in arguing that America's great crises follow a fixed chronology, and in asserting that at the end of our crisis, America will remain a republic no matter what. I want to make clear, on both of these fronts, I could not disagree more. Sometime in the winter of 2021, I became convinced that I perceived the trajectory of events as much more ominous than Neil Howe did, and reading his long-awaited new book last year confirmed that suspicion. Very little has happened recently that would challenge my basic assessment of where this country may be headed. I am very concerned about the prospect that 10 years from now, America will no longer be stable, united, prosperous, or free in the ways we have all taken for granted all our lives. Rather than elaborate on all the reasons my diagnosis is more serious than Howe's, I'll quickly address four important areas of concern and the conclusions I've come to about them. The first is across-the-board decline. America's social decline, which was already accelerating before COVID, is now accelerating so rapidly that it will almost certainly take a monumental change to turn the tide. On the border alone, the decisions made over the past 3+ years will reverberate for decades to come, and most of the significant indicators of economic, social, and individual well-being don't seem to suggest we're headed toward a future in which ordinary people can achieve the American dream. The second is the takeover of political correctness. Whether use of the term political correctness has diminished in recent years because of repeated shorthand references to PC or for some other reason, it can no longer be dismissed as a fringe development, one confined to a few isolated contexts and carrying mostly trivial consequences. In fact, it's clear that political correctness not only never went anywhere, but that it has wrought a kind of mass distortion on American society, especially on education, on our public discourse, and on the power structures from which much of our public discourse derives. Before I continue, it's important to establish what political correctness is. Since there is no formally settled definition, I'll use an operational standard that draws from the writing of Angelo Codevilla, as well as from Merriam-Webster's entry for politically correct. I define political correctness as a shifting set of ideas and practices which has the effect of regulating social interactions and social hierarchies, typically through language and policies that advantage certain favored constituencies and which exclude, demean, and punish those who dissent. Applying this standard, it's clear that the label politically correct fits most of America's elites today, and that political correctness is the means by which our establishment, a group Codevilla coined the ruling class, maintains deference to its power. Far from confined to wacky academic disciplines and corporate training seminars, political correctness on both the micro and macro level is now a weapon wielded by the powerful against the not-so-powerful. Neil Howe spends a good portion of The Fourth Turning Is Here diving into the differences between so-called blue states and red states, apparently in the belief that traditional left versus right partisanship is still the great overriding divide in America. But I pose this question: which seems to be the greater divide right now? The divide between New York and Texas, or the divide between the political, economic, and legal establishments in the blue jurisdictions and the people they hold in low regard? The third is the ongoing push by America's ruling class to hold on to power by any means necessary. Listen closely to the way America's establishment elites in politics, in the media, in corporate leadership, and elsewhere speak, and it becomes clear their sense of what constitutes reality has become irrevocably distorted by political correctness. Whether they started out predisposed to such views or adopted them purely out of self-interest is anyone's guess. But what is beyond dispute, not to mention well-documented, is that America's ruling class has equated the effort to hold on to its own power with the preservation of democracy. Again and again, they have demonstrated they view the prospect of losing power as existential for themselves and for America. So it hardly seems a stretch to conclude they will stop at nothing to prevent such an outcome. But of course, our ruling class can't determine the direction events will take all by itself. Our establishment elites have millions of attentive followers who believe every word they've said and support every measure they've taken to tighten their grip on control of the government, on speech, and on the narrative. Which dovetails to the fourth, the antipathy toward those Americans who never apologize for their traditional beliefs and who will never acquiesce to the demands of political correctness voluntarily. I've long felt that Neil Howe underestimates the degree to which so many Americans really have come to see other Americans as, to quote Angelo Codevilla, racist, sexist, maybe fascists, but above all, stupid. From my own judgments and lived experiences, I see this belief as something which is now deeply ingrained and that it will not subside anytime soon. Recently, the renowned investor and author Ray Dalio assessed the chances of a second American Civil War at between 35% and 40%. I see those chances as being higher. But what is even more concerning for the long term is where this period of crisis, this fourth turning, will ultimately lead if the encroachments of establishment power and political correctness continue unabated. Right now, I'm not optimistic about where things are going. However, on the positive side, we do still have time to act, and having some context for the times we're living through and the stakes we're facing can only help. The last thing I'll say before I close is I'm in the process of planning an episode on millennials and the hero archetype, which will, among other things, address developments that my generation has been contributing to recently. Much of what I say may surprise fans of The Fourth Turning who are not millennials, but as someone who has been a millennial all my life, I hope that what I have to say will resonate with those who tune in. Thank you again for listening. May God bless America.